Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how well do you know yourself? Well, there are many ways to find out. But maybe a good way is to get away from everything around you, everything that you know in your life that is influencing who you might be or who you might not be. Well, there's one way to find out, and that's to become a mystical backpacker. That sounds like an opportunity. And there's a book called The Mystical Backpacker, so we can find out how this works and has worked for the author of the book, who's a guest on our show, Hannah Papp. Hannah, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm so glad that you could talk with the Energy Stew audience, because this is a wonderful book that you've written about an amazing journey that you've had that really can enlighten all of us by understanding the process and seeing ourselves in a new light. And
Thank you.
To do that for yourself, right?
That's right. It was an adventure of the heart, the mind, and most of all, the spirit.
Well, and the body. Because you took off. You just up and left when you were in a moment of confusion and unhappiness of what was going on around you, and you just had to get out of there.
Right. And it wasn't so much an overwhelming confusion or even a profound unhappiness. I can't say that I was depressed by my life or anything like that. It wasn't extreme. It was simply, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, when your day-to-day life doesn't uplift and inspire you, and you sit back and you wonder, you know, is this all there is? Is this it? This is my life? And you can't quite put your finger on what it is that isn't working right, and you know you should be happy. Well, you've got a job that everybody thinks is great and looks great, and but when you're there all day, it doesn't feel like you're fulfilling your purpose, or you aren't stimulated or thrilled by your life in any way. And I think a lot of people live within that emotional box without feeling either entitled or as though breaking out of that is even possible.
Well, I don't think a lot of us know we're in a box. I think we just take it for granted that this is our lives, this is who we are, this is what we're putting up with, or these are the constraints in our lives. And we're living in this world that isn't fully expressive of ourselves, but it sure is expressive of our survival, of getting along in ways that we've gotten along.
That's right. That's true. And I think a lot of our living is reactive in that we react to our environment, we react to our community, the family members, the friends. There's always a slice of you that wonders if you're going to measure up or what it looks like. Well, I can't do that. What would they think? Or, this is really good. This will look really good in my Christmas newsletter.
Or,
you know,
or this is what
Christmas
my parents...
newsletters that come around, and everybody tells you all of their highs of the last year.
Oh, yeah. You want to have some. But also...
No, but is that really a high? Is it really a high? You know, sometimes that construct of what is actually a high that you would put in a Christmas newsletter and what is your high that you actually feel resonating deep within you, there can be a real disparity between those.
But happiness can also be our minimal survival. We can just be really glad that we have a job that's not so hot, but it's all right, that our parents approve of us for having it, that we're able to pay the mortgage or the rent, and you know, it's good. Because it's our survival.
I disagree with that. The reason I do is because I feel that a lot of people don't necessarily, and this has been myself included at times in my life, take a risk for something that we value tremendously because the fear of failing is so great. But one of the things I talk about in the book is the only bitterness and resentment I've felt is when I've tried really hard and failed at something I didn't actually want.
Right, but see,
and that
too.
When you are in the pursuit of your what rings true and authentic for you, then even the failures that you experience along the way are more palatable because you're being driven by your internal passions. And that is always an uplifting feeling.
Right. But that's how you identify. That's why you did this journey. But there are a lot of people who I meet them all the time, and they're so happy that they don't take any risks. And they don't know that they're not growing. and so there are different people in the world who are willing, like you, who are willing to, you know, upset the apple cart to discover yourself in new and better ways. And other people, it's like they're very happy that they're surviving in the same old way. So we hope that we're going to be discouraging those people from maintaining that attitude and helping people, you know, understand that maybe they just have to change some circumstances in their lives that haven't made sense to them before. I mean, it certainly didn't make sense to you what you did. You just did it.
Right, and it was a personal journey, and it rang true for me.
Right.
I don't think that any author writes a book hoping that that book is a golden rule for every single potential reader out there. Rather, you're moved by spirit, you're moved by an internal driving desire, and you create because the creation itself gives you joy, and you hope that what you've created goes out into the world and is received by some people for whom the message resounds. And I also feel that, you know, this concept of destiny, the book's subtitle is How to Discover Your Destiny in the Modern World. I think one of the misnomers about modern society's perception of what is a destiny is that it's somehow celebrated. If you become a celebrity, if you become top in your field or most popular in your field, then you have somehow achieved something. But I don't actually feel that that's true. I think that there are many people who, by society's standards, are successful, quote unquote, and are terribly, deeply unhappy.
Right.
And the inverse is also true, that there are people who live a life that on paper others may judge, perhaps unfairly, as being boring or uneventful, and yet that person experiences a profound and deep happiness. And that is what I think destiny is. When you embrace your joy, no path is too great and no path is too small for your destiny to have been realized. And I think the intention of the book is that for those people who feel that they're not in flow with their joy, this book may offer a potential solution. And if not that, then certainly an adventure. But I do believe that an adventure and a risk where your own needs are forefront, and I don't mean selfish needs, I mean your own self-love becomes a forefront goal on a daily basis, that does reveal your joy and your destiny.
Well, I think part of what happened in the book is to see it through your eyes of your journey and to appreciate it, to really enjoy the risks you took, the adventures you had, and to see how possible it is for us, for each of us, to live an adventure, even if it's not the same adventure you're taking, it's adventure. And so
true.
I think the idea of adventure rubs off from reading your book.
Well, thank you. That was definitely one of the goals.
Yeah.
And I also feel that when you tap into, some people have asked me, well, do you have to go far? And what about money? Like, what if I can't afford to travel? When I traveled, I was the poorest I've ever been. And I simply traveled on a different set of expectations. So I think there is a distinction between travelers and tourists, and this is something that literature explores, certainly a lot of travel magazines explore, and the idea is somehow that the traveler is a more honorable or a more worthwhile occupation than being a tourist.
Right, more of an adventurer.
Right. And I would spin it a little bit and say, you know, a traveler has an independent spirit where a tourist is part of a group. And so in that way, this is a book for travelers because it's a call to action to say, look, why don't you try it? Try to travel by yourself and see what comes of each pregnant moment. When you travel by yourself, you have the opportunity to be alone with your thoughts. And most importantly, you have the opportunity to each and every day choose that activity which most uplifts you in that day. There are no negotiations.
Right.
And when you experience that for days on end, what happens is that you are living in a calm, peaceable flow of joy that is neither high nor low, but becomes a very smooth ride within which you can then begin to explore and journey through the inner terrain, your thoughts, your emotions, your memories, your driving desires. And so mystical backpackers are really engaged in a twofold process where they're not just journeying out in the world, they're also journeying within. One of the things the book does is it facilitates that inner journey with exercises at the end of each chapter. And
yes, and I like those a lot.
And you did?
They were very helpful in listing. There were so many lists here. It's you want to know what has made you the happiest, what has made you the saddest, what lessons you've learned from different relationships, what are your favorite things, what are things you want to change. So, you know, there's and many, many more topics
many, yeah.
of lists that you work through. And it's been very, very, you know, I liked seeing the list that you put, all the lists
Thank you.
Put together.
Thank you.
Yeah. By the way, I was a mystical backpacker a long time ago in Europe. I took a long summer where we did differentiate between the tourists and the travelers.
mm-hmm.
And it was, I forget the different terminologies that we used, but, you know, we were just on a Ural Pass and following, you know, there was a book that just said Europe on $5 a day. And
yeah.
That's what you could get by on in those days.
Yeah.
And it was amazing where you could, what you could find to, you know, places to stay. So you stayed in hostels mostly.
Oh my gosh, I can't even number the weird places I stayed, and thank God my mother didn't know about them at the time.
Right, and yet when I was traveling, you could stay in decent hotels for $1 a day. So,
well, now, I mean, if you check out my Pinterest board, what's amazing is that now there are glamorous eco hostels all around the world, and so you can have a much nicer standard of living on few dollars than you were able to when I did this. It was your book had morphed into, I think it was, you know, Europe on a shoestring budget, something like that, and you know, it was probably, I would say, $50 a day would get you your hostel, your meals, and in those days you had to go to an internet cafe, so your web access, you know, laundry. When you amortized it over the whole course of the trip, it was about $50 a day, or less, the goal always being less. I tell people, always budget a little bit extra so that you've got some wiggle room when you find that steak dinner you just can't live without.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's opportunities, and a lot of it comes from being socially open when you travel, and you talk about that, how important it is really to to stir the pot, meet people, and amazing adventures happen when you open up to people
Absolutely.
You might not be open to before.
Absolutely. It's really about entering a yes space. I think a lot of people, maybe not even in a way that is so obvious to themselves. I think a lot of us go through our day-to-day life with no being our knee-jerk reaction. No, I'm not going to take that road. I'm going to take this road. No, I'm not going to do this. No, I'm not going to do that. No, I don't want that for lunch. I don't want to go to that restaurant. I don't want to meet that. You know, we are living in a no space. The book invites you to step into yes. And yes is an uncomfortable place to be because in some ways it's a giving up of control. To say, oh, okay, well, I'm going to talk to a stranger. This feels really uncomfortable. Say yes to it. And sure enough, out of every five strangers you talk to, one of them may turn into a friend. So similarly with what you were talking about, budgets and traveling, you know, if all you can say yes to is a 4 or 5-star hotel, then you're not going to get very far as a mystical backpacker on a budget. But if you're willing to say yes to a tent, or you're willing to say yes to a hostel, then you're going to go much further.
There are a lot of people out there doing that. It's interesting. My son actually went on a backpack trip through Central America several years ago, and just wandered around, took buses, and stayed in these very, very inexpensive places that all you really wanted is something to lie on and protect yourself from mosquitoes. But it's amazing how many opportunities there are and how many people there who are travelers, you know, who are interested in this discovery that you put yourself through and then come back and actually live interesting, in many ways, very grounded lives, and partly because they are more trusting of themselves in the world.
And I think they become more trusting in the world as well because they see that they've moved through it and good things happen, good things came of it. You know, psychologists have studied this and have found that people who travel and people who spend time abroad actually have better social skills, and are more positive thinkers, and they're better at creative problem solving. So
yeah,
that's
people
really
who have stirred the pot and haven't relied on the traditional environment that they originally have been conditioned to. And
right.
And so they have tested themselves and found that, yes, they can think on their feet. Yes, miracles do happen.
Right.
And they
right.
can trust life to keep on producing new miracles all the time that can support our risk-taking.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that's so important about getting the most you can from an experience like this is, yes, go to places that uplift you. See those things that you've always had a desire to see or the things that you feel passionate about. But also use it as an opportunity to go within. Because I think a lot of the people, including the people I met when I was traveling, they were, you know, there were people, not everybody, there were some people who were drinking their way across Europe in one long prolonged party for the whole summer. There were people who were traveling in small groups and very reserved and not talking to anybody else outside of their small groups. I also met older people who were taking time before starting a second career. I met a couple from South Africa, and they were professors, and they were on a sabbatical, and they were doing research, and they just decided that they would backpack their way across many different countries rather than take trains and planes. And so there are lots of loopholes for accessing this experience outside of being in your 20s and not really having a lot of responsibilities. And it's not about shedding responsibilities. It's about creating a window of time. And so if you're a mother and you have children or you have pets or you have a job, a lot of people, especially in the greater D.C. area, which is where I live, a lot of people here have endless vacation days they've saved up and still haven't taken. It's always an opportunity to just step into that window of space and use it instead of going to the Poconos for a week with your kids. Use it to just reset, hit that reset button on your own life and have an experience that makes you a better parent, a better spouse, a better coworker, because you're tapped back into a space within in which you can thrive.
Right. You understand, you can see yourself in the world in ways that you haven't given yourself a chance to be tested.
Right, right.
And we think we have, you know, because life tests us all the time.
Yeah. And my father has a saying, which I think every time I'm feeling sorry for myself because something, I'm going through some struggle or there's some obstacle has presented itself in my life, my father always reminds me, if you took everybody's problems and piled them up in a big pile, people would only grab their own back.
I like that a lot. It's very wise.
Yeah, when you put yourself out into the world, one thing I always notice when I come back from traveling is, wow, my house was much nicer than I remembered.
Oh, good. Yeah, sure.
You know, because once you've been through endless miles of discomfort, because let's say, you know, you do put yourself out of your comfort zone. Is it comfortable to sleep in a tent when you have a nice mattress at home? No, comparatively, no. But if sleeping in a tent means you get to see the Greek islands, yeah, I think that's a good exchange. I'll do that.
Right. But so much of it is understanding life better because you're challenging life in ways that you don't normally challenge it.
Exactly.
And in order to do that better, you list a bunch of mystical tools.
That's right.
So let's talk about the tools.
Sure. Which ones did you like?
Well, I like them all. I mean, certainly signs. There are always signs that we pay attention to that mean something to us, and we think, well, that shouldn't mean anything, but it does to me, so I think I'll pay attention to that.
Right.
And then there are, of course, prayers. But you have a number of different kinds of prayers.
Mm-hmm.
You have asking prayers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we certainly want to ask for magic.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have what I like is thanking prayers.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciating opportunities to be grateful for.
Right.
And even discerning gratefulness amidst things that you're not grateful about.
Exactly.
So it's finding a positive slant to things, which is
right.
a very good way to hold oneself, and that would be creating an environment that is, that I would say that works in prayer, because we are always creating our own environment. So if we can be more positive, then we're creating it through prayer of intention to create a more positive result.
Right. Well, I think a lot of us occupy the asking prayers space really easily. That's a comfortable place to be in.
Yeah.
And even, you know, when you're watching old movies and they show kids at bedtime and stuff, you've always got that insertion where they wish for something. They wish for, you know, the orphan kid wishes for a mommy or daddy. The happy, well-adjusted, upper-middle-class kid is wishing for a toy. You see this story being told a lot. And, in fact, even in church, you're taught, you know, if things aren't going well, ask for God's help. So I think that's the most common space to occupy in prayer. But as you know and as you touched on, to manifest, when you want to manifest a feeling of satisfaction and joy and abundance in your life, the space within which you can begin to feel that immediately is actually accessed through gratitude.
Right. And then you have enlightenment prayers, which is really, they're kind of like beingness prayers.
Right.
They're in a state of holding light. And so the prayer is really being in your own light.
Exactly. And stepping into that feeling of oneness with all that is.
Right. That was great. And then another wonderful mystical tool is paying it forward. And you found in your journey that it really does work too, because so many people were helping you, and you had the opportunity to help others, and all of a sudden you see life just works better when everyone's helping each other.
Yeah, it's that domino effect. You know, when that one person cuts you off on your way to work, and you were in a perfectly lovely mood, and then they cut you off, and then you become vile.
Right.
You know, and then you're saturating and steeping in the negative thoughts of this nasty person who cut you off, and then, you know, by the time you get to the office, you've got a little cloud of doom around you. Well, joy spreads just as easily. And so if you can be that person that puts down that mood and doesn't pass it on, but converts it instead to kindness, consideration, thoughtfulness, pleasantries, that also spreads. That also has a ripple effect and moves through your community, your the world at large.
Right. So there's so much in your book to talk about, and we're running out of time. I love the whole idea of being in the land of the lotus eaters, and and how we have to know that we can't stay there too long.
Right.
Because it's too nice. And,
well, I think what's interesting, there's a dichotomy where actually you can be in the land of the lotus eaters because you're in a place of denial, and whether that's here I am living my day-to-day life and the fact that I feel understimulated or discontented in any way, I'll deny that. That's a form of being in the land of the lotus eaters. But most importantly, on a mystical backpacking journey, that's the phase where you have really hit your stride as a traveler, as a mystical backpacker. You've had, you know, what Oprah calls those aha moments, where suddenly the exercises have helped you connect with some of your inner obstacles, your inner truths, and you're starting to feel like you have a better understanding of yourself and a better understanding of how to be a traveler. And so you're in that stride. And then you start to have really a lot of fun. And then entering the land of the lotus eaters is when you, rather than wanting to go back home to your life, are envisioning a completely new and different life. Like, oh, I'll just stay on this tropical island. Maybe I can work remotely.
And people do that.
And
but
some people do that. And if that's
us.
Your destiny, right. All the power to you.
Right. So we're about out of time, and your name is Hannah Papp, P-A-P-P, and you've written The Mystical Backpacker. Do you have a website?
Yes. People can visit the book's website and become a member of the community to access all kinds of freebies like videos and downloadable meditations. One of my favorite things to do, the meditations will help you with some of the exercises in the book, and that can all be found at themysticalbackpacker.com.
There's also
a store there where I've commissioned some artists and created some art myself, where there are beautiful mystical backpacking tools available as
great.
Well.
Hannah Papp, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thank you for having me. What a wonderful experience.
Yeah, and I really loved your book. And
thank you.
Great
thank
talking
you so much. Take care.
You too. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.